Hi, thank you. So as said, today we'll learn about DDoS, but not about what DDoS is, because that's something that you all should know about. But we actually know DDoS from the defender's side, mostly. We hear about DDoS at the news, at the media, or whatever. Some APT guys did some DDoS, some viruses, some botnets. But we always hear just one side of the border, the defenders. Now, we'll learn today about mitigation of DDoS, or more specifically, how not to mitigate DDoS. First of all, doesn't work. Okay, excuse me. So first of all, we get some intro into DDoS, what is DDoS, but what it is all about, something boring, just one slide about it. Methodology of work of our method of delivering this kind of service, we've been attacking now for 3 years via DDoS services to our customers that want to test their systems for DDoS mitigation or correct DDoS mitigation, and guess what? Not all of them were so correct as we figured out before. Afterwards, we talk about some DDoS in the wild. What is exactly going on in the world? Just some statistics, again, something boring. And then we've come to the 10 most common from the book strategies that we figured that you should hear about. At the end, we'll have some Q&A, of course. So myself, Moshe Tzioni, I do security stuff, I don't know. I'm managing a team of security researchers at Verint. We do something cool with defense. But except for that, mainly I'm experienced with penetration testing and ethical hacking. And for, as I said, from 3 years of hard work about DDoS, we are attacking and providing our customers a service of DDoS attacks. That's the end of the shameless promotion slide. You will never hear about it again. So everyone gets DDoS, not in the correct sense of the word, because everyone, meaning you. If you are an attacker, you will learn maybe, I hope, that you will learn one or two tactics that you didn't know before. If you're a defender, you'll know what not to do or what are the most top 10 common strategies not to do or to avoid from. And if you're neither an attacker or a defender, you just kick back, relax, and hear some good laughs over someone else. So the method. The method of delivery is somewhat complex because we want to have control over our botnet. We have a legitimate botnet, of course. Everything that I will mention here is legitimate, and we are doing it as legit as we can. We have our own botnet, a pretty vast botnet all over the world, all over the globe. And delivering this kind of controlled mechanisms for DDoS for our customers have some extra edges, like we view exactly what is happening. We log all the stuff. This is pretty hard to do, actually, when we are talking about botnets with thousands of computers that we want to control each one of them and know what exactly we are missing. And on top of that, we have something more like a red team and a blue team. So the blue team is incorrectly named blue, but you can see Spock with a blue t-shirt. The blue team is on site with the customer and viewing all the logs, not for mitigation, not for telling him what to do, just for taking notes for the red team. And the red team is on the other side of the line attacking the customer with the vast botnet. And together with the two Spocks, we have a complete image of what exactly is happening on the network or maybe in the computers of the customer, and through that we can have a good recommendation, not just a recommendation. We know the site, we know exactly what happened, we can pinpoint it, we can analyze it, we can analyze our own botnet in terms of improvement if you want to improve for the next time. So together we have this visualization of the analysis and we can progress with the attack. Moreover, some in the wild DDoS use mainly, maybe it's a shock for most of you, but mainly by SANS. Most of the attacks are less than 2 gigabit per second. I'm mentioning that just to acknowledge that DDoS does not have to be so large as the media claims it to be. Of course, there are times that network bandwidth is the main type of things, but if we hear about some DDoS in the media, it doesn't mean that automatically it's DDoS by bandwidth, by the network side. We'll get to it later. Other than that, we have reflection and amplification. These are two words that we hear a lot. Reflection is the actual act of benefiting from a third party that we want to communicate with, and the third party is communicating and reflecting, so to say, to the actual site that we want to attack. Amplification is using some kind of asymmetric protocol or asymmetric behavior between the attackers and the defenders or the servers, so the servers will have to work much harder in order to accomplish something, and that's amplification. Last, most attacks that we hear about on the internet and on the media does not require brains. You can leave your brain out and then just attack with some kind of a tool. And because of that, most of them rely heavily on bandwidth consumption. My point is that you don't have to be that lame. You don't require most of the, like 90% of your brain, but you need a small fraction of it in order to designate and amplify your attack without actually using so much bandwidth as proposed. So, just some headlines, as I mentioned. There is more than a front end. We come to it at least once in the examples. But everyone is thinking of websites that are going down by DDoS, by some kind of a login to a bank, or maybe the www site for the bank. But it's not exactly it. If you can attack the back end, then we'll get to it. Other than that, you have the backend work for you. The backend is actually doing something, not just presenting a cached page or something. So you can actually amplify your attack by the backend. Keep it stealthy. They might be listening. The magic of sniffing. We all heard about it. The SOC team, the SOC manager, is online and checking his site all the time. He's there with the magic of sniffing. And think of amplification in a general way. When I'm saying stealthy, I mean that use your own tools. Most of the attacks that you hear about and read, or maybe even if you have the source code for it, you can read the source code, and then analyze by yourself what the attack does. And attacks are mainly, DDoS attacks are mainly very simple to comprehend because you need a small fraction in the distribution of the attack in order to complete it. So if you know what you're doing, you can easily, believe me, very easily write your own scripts, and by that you eliminate 90% of the signatures that are residing on IDSs and anti-DDoS machines. So amplification on the general term, we refer to it as four pillars. We have the network attack, the usual suspect. We have the CPU, which is very limited in some cases, and CPU was actually attacked by someone on 28C3, which I forgot his name because it's not my native language, but some very professional guys devised an effective attack over CPU, presenting a single GET or POST request to an HTTP server and then evaluating the CPU up onto 99% of the system by using hashes. So CPU is, again, a very prominent attack that we choose to attack in the process. The other thing that we choose to attack mainly is the memory, volatile memory. Everything uses volatile memory, and we can use it to our advantage. Think of it as everything that is done on the website. If you have, let's say, a form, and the form is undergoing some kind of a multi-stage, you can actually do maybe part of the stages, maybe all the stages, and in-memory residents will be very effective in DDoS. And last is the storage itself. You have some amount of storage, on-disk storage, and even the I/O buffer of the drives that are working very hard to complete the mission. Okay, so last, this is a true story. At the request of the survivors, the names have been changed. We'll never do shaming to any of our customers. You know what comes next. Out of respect for the dead, the rest have been left unchanged. Okay, so ready, set. The actual result is facepalm. So every one of the stories will be presented by a facepalm ratio. We'll have a scale of facepalms. You'll see it. And did I mention at the end and the number one? We go 10-1. Number one, I can promise you that all of you will do an epic facepalm. That's a promise, okay? Ready? Number 10. Number 10 was common, actually. It's less common nowadays because everyone knows that, mainly everyone, network guys knows that that's rubbish. Limit the rate of incoming packets. That's something that is magic for network people to say, yeah, we have a DDoS like 2 gigabits of bandwidth. Oh, no problem. We have 1 megabit of bandwidth, so let's use only 1 megabit of bandwidth to upload. Then this way we can't even choke the rest of the 99 megabit per second. So, of course, you are nodding, all of you, I see the heads. If you have an incoming packet coming at you, this doesn't work, and that's why. The customer had a DDoS, actually, and that's why he asked the ISP, and the ISP told him, please rate limit the incoming packets into your servers. That was the ISP talking. And so he did. And he believed that he is sufficiently mitigating the attack if we test him, and he requested a test. So we delivered. And it was pretty simple to deliver, because if you have the knowledge of how the internet works, so you have a GET request, or you have, let's say, a GET request. A GET request is something pretty easy in size, like 1 kilobyte, let's say 1 kilobit. Or maybe 1 kilobyte, let's say. And you request a file from the server. If the file is sufficiently large, you have, let's say, 1 megabyte of a file. You can go with less, by the way. You can go with 200 kilobytes. It will be an amplification factor of 200 times more. Think about it. So now we can use the minimum amount of data that we want to upload in terms of, and then get it from the download itself, meaning that effectively the servers are choking themselves. So the beauty of this tactic is that will work always, not only when someone will try to mitigate you. So the mitigation is, of course, a fail. But I'll say that's the consumption by reflection, but it's an implied facepalm, something that you all should know and say, OK, that's something stupid to begin with, so maybe it shouldn't be on this scale at all. So does Tommy Lee Jones. Number 9. That's a beauty. We have vendors that monitoring the sites all the time, or maybe not the vendors itself, maybe the SOC. In this case, in this story, as I said, a true story, the monitoring was done by a third party. That was the only job was to monitor the site. Now, when you monitor anything, you come to, after 20 minutes of an attention, your attention drifts away and you think about puppies or about your babies or about your friends or about, I don't know, what you ate for lunch. And then you forget about monitoring, because monitoring tends to be something very, very, very boring to do. So you look at a graph, and if everything is okay, you leave it as it. But in this case, we didn't leave it as I presented it. We attacked the site, and the site was down. Now, when the site was down, it was a surprise attack, meaning that the man that requested the test was the security officer for this customer, for this organization, and he didn't let know of the IT and the third party that is doing this kind of test. So when the site was down, he sees the site is down. You don't have to be an expert to see that. And then he just waited and waited and waited some more. Now you'll ask yourself, wait a second, maybe an email, maybe a phone, maybe someone will pick up the line and say to IT or say to the stock, listen, guys, we have a problem. But no one did. Why so? So, because two things. IT was pretty quiet. No one called IT, and we'll figure out why in a second. No one called IT. No one got an email about it. And the monitoring vendor wasn't aware of anything going on wrong on the network. So what went wrong exactly? So first of all, the vendor saw, as I said, the logging system. And the logging system was looking a bit like that. You have a pick, you have something like a bot. The I don't know about the colors, but the most of it are susceptible as botnets, and it's in a relaxation somewhere. So first of all, that's the screenshot that when the security officer called the vendor and asked, say, guys, do you see the site? Is everything is okay? Say to him and send him this screenshot. That's the actual screenshot from the vendor. So everything looks, I don't know, suspicious, but let's say it's relaxed after this peak. Let's say it that way. Problem is that, A, they didn't check the site actively. All they needed to do is just click on their favorite browser, apparently Internet Explorer, and then go to the site. And if you go to the site, you see the site is down. You don't have to be an expert or a SOC team to see the site is down. So they didn't do exactly that. Now, for the second question, why doesn't the IT got any calls or emails? Because, and that's in addition to this epic fail, the actual bandwidth that's used for the bank's servers, this customer servers, was used for the HQ traffic inside the corporate. So everyone that wanted to surf at the time, I'm talking about hours of no surfing and no email for the corporate sites, no one could email and no one can use the VoIP phones on the... So that was a bit of fun. And this kind of facepalm is a bit of facepalm. You should know about that. That's easy. And it's cute, right? Oh. OK. Going to number 8. OK. So I've mentioned it before. Backend servers are not important to be protected against DDoS. Again, a very serious assumption we have to consider heavily. Backend servers are not important. A, that's bullshit. Backend servers are always important. If you think that any servers are not important, don't use those servers. It's backup. So, if those servers are not needed to be protected against DDoS, so they are somewhere, and this notion of thinking was coming from the media, I guess. So everyone is reading about this kind of, let's say, for example, supposedly Bank of America was attacked by DDoS, and the first thing that you hear about is everyone is tweeting about the login site for this bank. Why is not responding? So the media is responding accordingly. She's right. The login site for the site is down. Oh man. But actually, what can happen is something much more vast than that. But you won't know it unless you are sitting at the SOC and know exactly what went wrong. And maybe it is. Maybe most of the attacks do actually hit the front end. But it doesn't mean by that the back end are non-important. So in this case, we try to map the site. We as attackers want to attack the back end because of this notion. We want to attack it and want to know what to do, how to designate some kind of a backend server. So actually, that's easy because I don't know about easy, actually, but it's very common for pen testers to do when you check a black box site. You just go to a site and try to assume what is going on under the covers and see what exactly is happening, but you can't really see because you're not a developer. You're just testing the site as a hacker or a penetration tester. Now, when you pen test the site, you try to figure out where is the database, what is going on, and that's pretty easy. If you get a query for somewhere, some search, supposedly it's an SQL, an OSQL server, or anything like that, maybe a file even, but it is a data set. You can query it, you can do some work on it, and that's why this notion is pretty bad. So the backend servers, some problems there. Maybe someone is diddling me? No? OK. So in this case, we have to guess something. And that's a pretty easy guess if you have delays. If you have inappropriate delays between searches or between forms, you can assume that something is going on in the back end, not in the front end. The front end doesn't think hard about something. That's the whole point. So if the site is thinking hard about something, that's the back end. So you hit gold, and you profit from it when you do DDoS. And this facepalm is a kitten, because you have to be a kitten to do that. That's so 90s of you. OK. Number 7. We had actually a pretty good customer in terms of relationships. And he really respected our work that we did with one of our DDoS. And then he called us again. But this time, he bought a shiny new box. And this shiny new box cost a fortune, of course, but any box does. And when you buy a very, very pricey box, you may be connected to all of your servers. We said before that the backend servers are as important as the frontend. So protect all the domains, connect all your sites to it, connect all your corporate machines, your, I don't know, maybe your bank, I don't know. Everything that he could figure out, he connected to this box. Now, you can say to yourself, so what's the problem? So he gets some extra stuff or not. What he's really getting is protection from DDoS against all of those domains. And when we did it, when we did the actual test, we tried to figure out what is the box is supposed to do. Now, reading off some brochures of this new box that we didn't know before, it's pretty nameless, to be honest. So the mitigation is pretty unique. They have like the strategy of it is like thinking about what is going on. The box is just sitting there for 20 seconds when it suspects something, and after 20 seconds, after we suppose it's building some kind of a model for the attack, and then it tries automatically to figure out how to deflect the attack. This mechanism is usually preceded by something called draining of the lines. When you have all the lines that are susceptible, you just drain all the lines, you just drop it all, and then wait for new lines, and then by the model that you built, the box can decide what is going in and what is not going in. So when we tried to attack, we were very scary, because always before the attack, before attacking the site, we gather information about something. We try to assess what exactly is happening, and mostly the customer does not need to respond to anything. We do it non-intrusively and try to figure out the technological benefits and technological call trips that we want to overcome. So in this case, we just read the brochures and try to figure out some strategic ways that the defenders could do, and try to circumvent it. So we didn't have something really good, let's say, to be honest, when we started the attack. But exactly 21 seconds later, all the site went down from all over the world. Not only that, 6 minutes later, the guys from the blue team gets a call. Listen, guys, you have to stop the attack right now. Someone is very angry. Why? What is happening? You knew that this test is going on. We just shut it off. It's OK. We take about 2 minutes to shut off an attack and start it if we want to. So 2 minutes, let's wait a bit. It took about 1.5 minutes. And then the attack was gone. But none of the servers was responsive. So so apparently, they were very, very stressed about it, I guess. Not only that, you thought that's the end of the line. Not only that, is that not only the domains that we thought that we are attacking was down, all the corporate network was down, of course, because all domain was covered by the box. And because of the behavior and of this kind of shutdown, the complete shutdown of most of the computers that are involved with the internet traffic, some back, very back-end, let's say second-tier back-end of the corporate side, was trying to communicate to something very crucial to them without explaining exactly what, but let's say something went very wrong on the corporate side, and they lost some hefty money about it when they were dealing with transactions. So that was pretty embarrassing, and you can figure out exactly what happened. When the box was seeing all of it, by the way, I didn't mention monitoring. The monitoring itself was shut down because it was connected to the box. So everything went dark in a second, and everyone was stressed. The phones weren't voice over IP, so they were PSTN or dials. And then they dialed each other and said, okay, guys, let's stop it. And we stopped, and then I think it took like 7 hours of actual mitigation, actual try to bring back the servers to a normal operation. This facepalm is like that. Okay, number 6. That's a good one. I love it. It happens all the time, by the way. It's pretty common to encounter nowadays when you have many vendors that provide some kind of a cloud-based DDoS mitigation. We don't trust the vendor. That's what they are saying all the time. We don't give them certificates. Shamefully, that's what happens when you rely on third parties that you don't really know. It's nothing like the big five, I don't know, providers that provide some kind of a box or maybe a cloud-based mitigation. But you go with something, maybe a startup, maybe something in its youth when you want to support them, and maybe it gives you for free, it doesn't matter why. But it gives you some kind of another layer of security when talking about DDoS. So this kind of defense is pretty awesome for us, because if we know that this kind of operation is going on, or we can assume because of the nature of the relationship with the vendor, we can say, okay, so HTTPS is not covered, so we go HTTPS. And when we go HTTPS, it becomes even better, because THC, the Hacker's Choice, did a terrific research on renegotiation for SSL. And renegotiation SSL was proved by them to be so effective, like 15 times more for the CPU of the server, harder than your own work when you try to push your CPU to the most. And it can be actually pretty simple to employ with only 2 computers. But if we're talking about a very large bank, two computers will not be enough. You need like 100. So if renegotiation is present, we'll attack with renegotiation and it will be done. It's pretty hard to counter this kind of thing unless you have HTTPS and you know what exactly is going on the line and you can read it. And the second thing, that not only the vendor can protect you, you can't see anything because you are not actually processing the data. Now you can say, and you will be right, that you don't want to anyone else to see your data, right? But the thing is, my point is, if you are not trusting a security vendor, don't work with him. That's it. That's a pretty simple advice. And that's a double facepalm. The first one is the working with a security vendor that you don't trust. The second one is the visibility that you don't give yourself if HTTPS is not actually terminated by anyone. Okay. We need big data. Collect. It wasn't a pause, just drank some water. So we need big data. That's a big word. I don't know if you heard about it before. But big data is going to be a trend, I tell you. So we need big data. Let's collect it all. like Pokemons. We have big data, we have this network device, we have this network device, and we want to collect it all. So that's great for you. But when you collect it all, you have one big problem. That's storage space. And let's be honest, some protocols like PCI tells you to save all the data. That's something that you have to do. So maybe it's not only that you are wrong with your assumption of just collect the data, don't do anything with it, just collect it responsibly. And when it doesn't happen responsibly, you have logs and overcoming some storage boom and silo needed. You result in a complete lockdown. You don't have to do. You can't do anything on the servers. It's very hard to operate without, let's say, 4K for minimum, if you need something from the disk, and maybe the I/O itself is breaking down. But the most susceptible to those attacks are not servers themselves, because servers can be cycled through their logs, and most of the network guys knows how to do that. And infrastructure guys, but something that is overlooked many times is the network switches and IDS, IPS firewall as well, and maybe the anti-DDoS mitigation machine that you have, or maybe the VPN. And in this case that I want to mention, it was the IPS. The IPS, I'll leave the vendor, of course, alone, but the IPS wasn't cycling through its logs, and it got a storage boom. And then it just disconnected the whole site. So even when they wanted to mitigate the attack, they couldn't because the IPS was down, and because the IPS was down, no network can be reached to the site itself, and they couldn't connect to the IPS because there was no storage room on the IPS. So they couldn't fix the problem, and they needed to get to some bunker and press the button. I think the correct button. And that's a facepalm that is done by a third party. Number four. We are under attack. Enforce the on-demand scrubbing service. First of all, there's no such thing. I don't know if you heard about it, but on-demand scrubbing service is something that needs to learn about your traffic. You need to know what exactly to scrub, unless you want to teach them. And that's pretty much impossible if you are talking about a dynamically changing site. But let's leave it. Let's say there is such a thing like on-demand scrubbing service. In this case, we have learning mode. Learning mode is something very beautiful that lets you just switch off this kind of responsibility or this kind of mitigation, and just switch it on when you want the mitigation to be actually occurring. Now, in this case, we had it was an Australian customer, and it's not his fault. And he used some kind of a on-demand scrubbing service, so such to say. And the attack was legitimate traffic. If you actually know how legitimate traffic looks like, you can mimic it pretty easily if you use your own tools. With other more robust tools, you can do that in a good way. And last, you have to read the manual. Please do. And they read the manual and discovered that the manual itself of the vendor said, that's no problem. We can learn on demand. I'm not familiar with this notion, but let's say it's possible. And we'll leave it for a minute from now. The vendor response was epic. Now the story went like this. We had the site of the customer, we actually attacked it, and then it was pretty okay. We tried to make a ramp up of the attack so we can analyze what exactly is going on. So we wrapped up and wrapped up and wrapped up. And then when we reached some kind of a limit, we said, okay, it looks fine. Do you want us to continue with the ramp up? And he said, no, I want to test the on-demand scrubbing service. And in the second that he switched on the on-demand scrubbing service, all was shut and nothing can be accessed. And it was pretty impressive because not only that he does it like that, he didn't have any kind of control over it. He can't switch it off. He can maybe try to DNS it, and he tried to call the vendor. Now usually we do it overnight because we don't want to hurt customers that are actually using this site. True, this is harmful to us because we want to actually mimic a true, not off-peak, but on-peak towers when we want to actually attack via during Christmas times, let's say. But in this case, it was a large customer that they didn't want to actually hurt the customers. So that's negligible. So he picked up the phone and called the vendor. The vendor is a 24/7 hour someone that is picking up the phone. Someone picked up the phone and looked and heard about he was going on like someone that actually woke up from his sleep. We imagined that he wore pajamas, but we didn't have any kind of communication with him except voice. So he said to the vendor, "Listen, I have to have your help. My site is down. We are 6 hours to actually the morning. We 6 hours for morning, and when the morning comes, the customer will try to access the site, and no one can. Currently, no one can. But it's again, it's controlled." So the vendor said, "Wait a second. I have to consult with someone." He consulted with someone, and half an hour passed, and then he called back to him and said, okay, we'll try to figure it out. Another hour, and then the on-scrubbing service was down. But the epicness about this is the answer, the complete answer of the vendor. The vendor said, when they were asked, why didn't you actually told us that we need to calibrate the scrubbing service, that was the thing that he said. He said another thing, next time, buy our service of calibrating your site. That's a good vendor. And that's a triple facepalm. Why a triple? Because failing at protection, working with a vendor, and the poor vendor's answer. We are approaching number one. Number three. So what CDN is not dynamic? Let's enable it. CDNs is the content distribution network is pretty popular nowadays in protecting against DDoS. And that's pretty cool because it actually works. If you have a spread out a CDN, you can actually mitigate network-based, maybe even other-based attacks to your system. That's cool, right? But CDN has a culprit. It's called static and dynamic, and it's usually marketing, but most of the CDNs are static. Static means that it can pull off some requests for your site from static data, not something like searchable queries and stuff. And then you can cache this data on the CDN, and via that, other customers can benefit from the no lag at all from the CDN. Now, when a CDN tells you that it's not dynamic, which is good, which you should know about, and you use your site, which is dynamic, on the CDN, it can be very, very devastating. Now, why? Because the thing is that it works like that. If you have a CDN, and the CDN is getting a request from an attacker or just a regular user, it asks for some kind of a landing page, let's say. If the landing page is on, was visited by someone elsewhere in the vicinity of the CDN, it will know how to respond and then respond from its own cache. If it wasn't asked by someone at a given time, it will ask by itself. It issues a request for the origin. The origin is the actual domain that no one should access except the CDN. It will ask the origin about this request, get it back, and then get back to the customer, to the user. An attacker will do the same. Attacker does not know, we'll get to it in a second, does not know where the origin is and how to ask it directly. You need to ask the CDN about something, and the DNS request that he's issuing is giving him the closer CDN that he can need to think about when he's talking about the site. So in this case, we have an origin that is getting so many requests. So that's wrong if you're using dynamic. The thing is that dynamic is pretty easy to DDoS because If it's not dynamic CDN, meaning that it will need to issue each and every one of the requests, if it's a different parameter or value for those parameters, it will need to issue each and every one of that. All we need to do is just requesting from the CDN data with parameters that it didn't know. The same page, other parameters. Sometimes even parameters that doesn't exist on the site, but it doesn't matter. He will issue a command and issue a request for the site because it doesn't know the correct URL for that, and it doesn't have it on cache. So one of our customers did exactly that. Use a CDN, static CDN on a dynamic site, and we easily DDoS his machine. Another thing about CDNs, which is not exclusively for dynamic, but for dynamics is much more devastating, is that if you monitor your origin, many of the CDNs doesn't give you actual UIs for monitoring like traffic like DDoS. You have your own machine and you monitor that as good as you can, and maybe some kind of tools that you get from the vendor of the CDN. And actually, when you try to mitigate it, on your sites, you actually many times can't, because you can't see the actual attacker and you can't blacklist the attacker or something. You just see requests from the CDN. And if you block the CDN itself, that's good for us. Okay. And that deserves a distributed collage of facepalm. Number two, again, CDNs. CDNs is pretty exciting for me, because no one knows how to protect with CDNs. And when someone searches the web, in this case, some obscure site named Google, we use it for finding how to protect CDN origin. That's the best phrasing that we could work out. And the first one after the Akamai's one, which is advertisement, you have the how to protect your CDN origin server. Let's click on that. What do you say? Okay, we clicked on that. Oh, that's magic. And then we have several recommendations how to mitigate and how to protect your CDN's origin. And I just magnify it for you. This is a simple trick, and it is also the best solution. Create some random long set of alphabetic characters and use that as a subdomain. Even more so, can it be guessed? Yes, but highly unlikely. Can it be leaked? Yes, but again, highly unlikely. There was much rejoicing reading those lines. Why so? Let's talk about it. So, the tactic is like that. Find other subdomains. Translate it to IPs. Scan the hell out of it. It's a CIDR/24/16. Good chances there, but it's not bulletproof. You can actually miss a lot of those origins from the actual name. But something that is much more probable to find out is the who is service. Who is service never forgets. Means it is forgetting, because who is dynamic. But you have who is history is online, and you can check who is history. History domains, and then when you check it, you figure out, and we figure out in this case, that some of our customers actually bought this kind of service and tried to protect against it, and we figure out how we can know what is the origin. We want to attack the origin. Everything is static. It's pretty hard to attack static sites unless we have a subdomain, or unless we have another origin that we know that will be hurt by our attack. And we can't just attack some obscure subdomain. We need to know what we are attacking, to some extent, of course. Because of the backend, isn't really deterministic all the time. So who is never forgets? So we look online. In this case, I'm just giving an example for a malicious infected site named Bing.com. And this site is covered with a Whois history that you can pull off from VueDNS in this case, but there are many other services for Whois history. And then we actually thought about it. When you buy a CDN, you don't actually change the last IP of your site. You're just giving it out to the actual CDN provider. And then if you look up the Whois history, the last one, or maybe one before that, you actually hit jackpot, because this is the IP of the origin. And that's exactly what we did. And that's exactly what happened when the site went down and the customer said to us that he doesn't see anything on the CDN. That's a wrong. Number one. Okay, that's something personal, because in this case, the actual person that bought the service from us was the security officer of the organization, a big organization in Israel in this case. And this big organization was very, let's say, politically heavy. So the IT was very vicious in their attempts to block the attack. So, as I said, during this week of research before the attack, which is non-intrusive, we tried to figure out how the mitigation works from low impact attacks and stuff without actually impacting anything. We tried to figure out what is going on, and we saw that the mitigation that they invented was amazing. Like, we have one server, and we are attacking from this server, and from this on, the blacklist is not following just on our servers, but all of our servers worldwide, or just a branch of our servers in some place in this example, in the United States. And we tried to figure out why. Why is that? If you're attacking from one source, how come you can mitigate all the sources from this area? And the susceptible answer, and in this case the correct answer, was that the mitigation worked like that. If you see an IP, if the SIEM rises up in an alert, and then an IP is raised, then it doesn't block only the IP. Remember, he wants to block us, not an real attacker. And he knows that we are limited with our resources because as I said, we are legitimate as possible. So when he tried to mitigate us, he said to himself, okay, you have some botnet that he leased or bought somewhere, and this will be some kind of a cluster of IPs, which was correct in this case. Most of our servers do like that. So he didn't just block us, he blocked the whole /16 site. I'm hoping that you are not cheering for him, because... So, for example, in Germany, you have like 116 million IPs. In Israel, it's much, much smaller, but you can extrapolate. So, if you have 116 million IPs, you have about, roughly, of course, 1800 Class B ranges, right? So, if we have only 1800 IPs that we need to hit, and we can, let's say, spoof their SIEM, we can actually block all of the customer's nation, if the nation is the probable customer. In this case, insurance is probable to come from customers from this nation. In this case, Israel, as I said, is very small. And so we troll them a bit. So, so think of a monkey just typing IPs like crazy, and then it just blocks all the nation by itself, and it can't do anything about it, because 15 minutes after the actual attack have started, it's inflicted by all the nation, and before the 15 minutes were off, like half the time of that, he blocked himself, so he couldn't see the... And now you can see why it's my favorite. Now, remember what I told you about the mega facepalm that you will give me? Remember? So, that's the one, but I don't see you facepalming, so I brought my own picture. And actually, I think it's kind of a tradition, so if you may facepalm yourself for a second. That's okay, right? Right. Let's say it's okay. Thanks. Okay, so collective thoughts about it. maybe the most important one is test. Don't be afraid to test. Many of our customers didn't know that such service is in existence, and we are not the only one that providing this kind of service. We know. So there is no magic pill. You have to be an architect to understand that it implies not only the front end, it implies all your network, all your computers, maybe even more than that, maybe your phones and emails. But test it, and you have all the money in the world, all the toys. If you just deploy it without thinking, it will fail you. So please be responsible about it. And one last promise: if you won't do that, you can be evaluated to this presentation in the future. Thank you.
We now have about 10 minutes for Q&A. So, as always, please line up at the microphones or use the internet to ask on ISE or Twitter. We have a person reading out your questions here. And if you leave, as always, please be very, very quiet, because the talk is not over. It's going to go on for 10 more minutes, so please be very quiet. Microphone, no. No, you're not queuing. He's not queuing. Any questions? Okay, the internet. You need to switch on the microphone.
Should I ask my ISP before I DDoS or not?
Oh, that's
so. If anti-DDoS is included in the,
So that's partly a legal question and partly a tactical question, let's say, for your sake of evaluating your security. I won't touch the legal sections because I'm not a lawyer. And if for the legal section, you have to consult your law department if you have so. If you have such a department, for the other part. It depends on what is your focus on the testing. If you are focusing on testing the system as a whole, if you are looking at all the mitigation factors that you put into place, in my opinion, it's important not to notify the ISP if possible. But if it's not possible, of course, notify it.
Microphone number 3, please.
Hey, so there are techniques that, for example, Cloudflare has this project called Railgun, where they diff the websites and sort of not request the full website. Or I don't know really how they do it, but does this have any impact? Can you see this when you DDoS? Does this help at all, or is this just, pointless?
Usually we test with black box. It means like pen testing. We don't really know what exactly is happening on the other side, except what the blue team is being fed. Or seeing by the customer. Such examples as Cloudflare and others are examples of partly participating factors into the attacks and the testing, because they didn't provide us with much of the explanation that we want to, actually. I'm not talking about Cloudflare, because actually when I think of it, we've never tested something with Cloudflare in mind, not that I know of. It wasn't a factor, actually. And let's say other vendors similar to Cloudflare has approached us and usually put up some difficulties. I'm not talking about technical difficulties, more political difficulties. Let me know when you are doing it. The legal stuff is not correct. You can't do it. And you have only 10 minutes of time and something like that. So something like Railgun and similar is not employed by, haven't been employed in our testing yet. Hope it... It answered your question.
Microphone number 2, please.
How often do you find your customers well protected when you get there the first time?
let me put it that way. When we conducted tests, it is important to say that I'm not continuing these tests anymore. Like 2 months from now, I'm off. When we conducted these tests, we actually did, we took a length span 4 to 6 hours from the customer. And through these 4 to 6 hours, we actually provided usually one attack per hour. We tested some kind of attack that we have in stash that we actually prepared before according to our research. And if evaluating by overnight, if we have whatever number of attacks that we have overnight, like a real attacker will do, but on a very lengthy span, we have more than 95% of success. So most of the attacks, unfortunately, are not well protected. That answer the question?
Yes.
Okay.
And now the internet, please.
You said you just scanned the whole /24/16 even. Would IPv6 make it better? Think of a whole /56 and random IPs. That's quite something to scan.
Yeah. This is good. This is great. But I'm not familiar with any bank that is working with us, or any bank at all, that is moving to IPv6 as a whole. Just using the IPv4 and the IPv6 on top of that.
Number three, please.
So given that a lot of things are on shared infrastructure with Amazon and Cloudflare and stuff like that, how do you make sure that whatever you're DDoSing doesn't cause any collateral damage with people who are just innocent bystanders?
It does. And it's probably, if you are referring to not customers of the, you're referring to actually customers or clients of the customer?
Give it like someone on Amazon, you're DDoSing them for something, and something on Amazon goes down.
Okay, so shared infrastructure as a whole is a whole different ballgame. We have to consult legal, and the SLA with Amazon and Azure and others are pretty different from one another. Azure let you do stuff if you let them know in advance. Amazon, as far as I know of, doesn't let you do anything. It's pretty strict. In terms of testing, think about it, it's pretty massive not to test your own site. But again, it's considerable when you're thinking about the shared infrastructure, when you have Amazon or AWS or others. So it depends on the host and what are the SLAs with them.
Number one, please.
So thank you for the nice talk, but can we change the roles? So I would like to hear you a bit elaborating about what you would do if you have to run mission-critical infrastructure and how you would protect it.
I'm not a genius, so for starters, I won't presume that everything that I will say will be holy. It will be holy in another term. But I know that everything that I will do, I will try to architect, not just design a mitigation, architect a mitigation, a redundancy. As much as others know nowadays how to backup and how to hop swap something, it's pretty much the same when you're talking about redundancy and things that need to be standing by and how much lag time that you can have, because DDoS can occur. There is no magic pill, as I said. Nothing that I will provide you with a complete architecture will not be fail safe, but it will be epic fail safe. And on top of that, test your systems anytime you want. You can be the greatest developer, you will actually pen test your web applications, right? So that's the same thing. If you architect something, test it, put it to test.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
And once again, the internet, please.
Are there any particular solutions or products recommended or that are particularly bad?
No.
Number four.
Hi. So first of all, the photo was not really appreciated. I mean, we're not here for your amusement, and I think it's a kind of bad norm. And now moving on to the question, have you given any thought to attacks that saturate the link without sending any packets to the target? First of all, how to legally do that, and if you've ever had to do it, or it was never necessary because the site fell down for other reasons.
Let me put it again. If I understood it correctly, your question is, how can you actually do some damage without going on and on with the traffic?
Yeah, so you can be sending traffic to sites, IPs actually, that share a link with your target so that your target does not observe any traffic and so that you do not actually DDoS any of them, but so, I mean, they do not get tons of traffic individually, but the whole link that they share will be saturated, which would be nice to have because then you could see how your path actually, how resilient your path is to DDoS attacks. I mean, it's been described in academia, but I don't know if you use it in practice.
Okay, we didn't do something like that before. Personally, I it's hard to think about something that we can deliver such an attack with without anything, unless we have an exploit for that. Like I said, in 2863, there was an exploit exploiting many web application servers through their hashing mechanism. But unless we have an exploit, a designated exploit, and we talked about generalized stuff, not exploits per web application service, I don't think that's possible. But maybe it is in some situations when you have a database that is working very hard on crunching something, and you can do pretty much the same, which is the equivalent of exploit as an exploit, as I see it.
Not exactly. So you're sending traffic to IPs that are not related to your target, except that they're being hosted in the same data center, say. Oh. So that you saturate a link, but your target doesn't see any traffic.
Oh, you mean, you mean that I'm attacking another subdomain, and through that is impacting the actual one that I want
to
attack?
Well, another IP, yeah, it doesn't have to be related at all to your target.
Yeah, it that happened a lot. That happened a lot when we got confirmation from the customer, of course, to attack other domains, just for the sake of it, to test if the infrastructure is shared for any means. You have to have some kind of a shared infrastructure, of course, maybe the same host, maybe it's networking on some sites. And the one example that I said about the shiny box, it was in the UK, that's exactly what happened on the tier 2 backend. The tier 2 was attacked. It wasn't our target, but it was attacked. So it is possible through other subdomains by definition in that.
And unfortunately, we are out of time. So please, once again, thank Dalmos.